So, okay. Looks like our levels are good, and we're streaming, so I'll go ahead and, like, announce the show and all that stuff.
Oh, we're streaming?
Yeah. You ready?
You want me to test it first?
No, I mean, I don't go into it with the expectation somebody's going to listen to the stream right now. We're just going to, like, run it as a podcast later.
But are we streaming it?
Yeah.
You just said that we are.
Yeah.
You want me to test it or just
we know it's going to suck. We're just going to do a show. And then when the show is over, we upload it as a podcast to SoundCloud.
Oh, it's doing fine. I tested.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's already going.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck it. Let's tweet it out then.
Three times a week, get together, everybody party,
and have a good time. But we tortured some
folks. Hitler had plans. See through all of your lies, Barack Obama, you wicked, wicked devil!
Don't bitch kick him!
Holy shit, man. That's the other building! That's terrorist!
Other building?
That's terrorist, bro! That's fucking terrorist!
Hello, my little trolls, my little sock puppets.
You are tuned in to Hate Radio, broadcasting all across the galaxy. Break out the terror mat and put your kids to sleep. Here's your host, Hate Set.
You're listening to Chronicle.su Hate Radio. I'm HateSec, and joining us live tonight, as always, is famed Chronicle.su editorialist Kilgore Trout of the Internet Chronicle. Kilgore, what's new?
It's just, I don't know what is new. That's a very good question.
It feels like the more shit happens, the more it all looks the same to me. Like, it's all blurring together. Like, at one point, this Molly Crabapple shit would have been, like, a devastating blow to the way that I read Twitter or something, you know? But now it's just fodder.
I don't think it's that to anybody, though. Nobody thinks that.
I think that.
That it's a blow to the way they read Twitter. I mean... A lot of people are waving their hands around, doxing is some god-awful evil thing. And now that it's a great thing, I don't know. It's just a little bit of drama. Usually things escalate and get to that point eventually.
Molly Crabapple... doxed this Emma Quangle.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to, like, shit ourselves because Quangle is a UN.
She's not UN, first of all. She's IOM, which is just some other thing. And we're supposed to have all sorts of crazy assumptions that make it important, such as she's a Nazi. I mean, not Quangle, but Crabapple, who is CIA. You know, people will paste together every bit of evidence they can to build up these big elaborate ideas. And that's all good, but really it's just kind of a, Encyclopedia Dramatica type thing you could type up.
It seems all pretty ground level. Like, the serfs are at it again. This is way beneath something like a mega corporation like Liebeldrucker Incorporated.
Yeah, well, even Glenn Greenwald weighed in on it.
What did he say?
He said that doxing is a bad thing. But it's not, he said some strange thing like it's, this isn't a specific problem, nothing against Molly Crabapple or anything, just a, it's just a general problem out there.
The doxing itself is a problem, is what he's saying, and this is
but
an example of that
problem. He wouldn't say she is that problem.
Because he doesn't want to come out and, like, trash Crabapple or anything like that.
No, she's got too many fans. It's too popular.
We should try to get her on the show.
You're kidding, right?
I mean, she'd do it.
Who?
Wouldn't she? Molly Crabapple?
No.
She's probably listening to it right now.
No.
She's probably wringing her hands together in her lap, just waiting to see what it is that we're saying about her. So we should be careful. We should be Julian Assange here. Why did I say Assange? Fucking Greenwald.
We should be making a bunch of ambiguous, siding with nobody type of statements.
Safe generalizations.
Well,
doxing is not something that we would like to see go on. We think it's unfortunate that it recently. Like, I've been doxed. Were you ever... Who doxed me? Barrett Brown, I think, was the first to dox me.
He doxed us all. He's a doxing.
He really dropped dox.
Yeah. It's his game.
He doxed Robert Smith and his kids.
You looked into him.
His baby goats.
What about baby goats?
His kids.
Oh.
Robert Smith.
Yeah.
Had a whole, what do you call it, a flock of kids in his yard. And Barrett Brown was directly threatening his ability to raise those kids up into healthy goats, right? That's why they took him down?
They took him down because he broke the law.
And it's unfortunate that he broke the law, and we don't want to say too much about it. But Barrett Brown is where he is now because he broke the law, and we feel that justice was served, and we really can't say any more than that. You'll have to talk to our attorneys.
I wouldn't say that much, even.
That's being a little too committal.
I wouldn't say half that much.
I would just ramble aimlessly in front of the news cameras if they ever pointed them at us. Like, is this helping?
No. You shouldn't do that, no.
I would.
It's a bad idea.
I wouldn't even... And if I was ever talked to a cop, I would not even... I would be my own attorney right there on the scene. I would never talk to an attorney. Because this is a country where, look... If you got nothing to hide, you've done nothing wrong, you can talk to the police. They're good old boys, just like you and me, Kilgore.
I don't know about that.
We're looking out for our best interests, you know what I mean?
No.
And I think if old Barry hadn't gone around threatening baby goats, that he'd still be walking today. Walking and talking. Somebody's, Lauren Pespisa, I follow her on Twitter. She tweeted... I think it was this morning. I think Barrett Brown might have been published in The Intercept.
You didn't know that? He runs a column there, kind of on a monthly basis or bi-monthly or something.
She said it was really good.
His latest one?
Yeah. I didn't read it.
I haven't read it either. But the one I read last sucked.
What didn't you like about it?
I mean, just had not. You'd think that you'd have a story to tell if you were that guy, but he just has a bunch of kind of self-important talking point type things he's cooked up to juice up his case, you know, make his case seem, you know, more important and notable and so on.
Biggest this is to the tech community what Casey Anthony was to dead babies on Nancy Grace.
Yeah, everybody tunes in for a day or two and never cares again.
Lauren said it was a good article today in today's Intercept.
Well, shit, you said that, you know. What the hell was it even about?
I'm just telling you what I...
What did he even write? Let me look it up, and we'll read the headline.
Okay. Right, so let's read the headline, and then here's what we do next. We jump down like three paragraphs and read the last sentence of his third or fourth paragraph.
Why that one?
That's the way I read stuff. I jump down three or four paragraphs. I read the last sentence because that's where they're really hitting the hard downbeats. And I want to know what this sentence is saying.
Usually, I just read the end and beginning.
Well, the end is good too, though. That's like almost the same. Start at the end. Start near the end. I'm on the Intercept. Sort of a difficult website to navigate.
Yeah, it's a piece of trash.
This is the way new sites do, though. They've got this giant fucking tall picture at the top, and you got to scroll down three pages to see the headlines. I mean, it's, you know, that was the kind of the thing that sucked about magazines was that you had to have a cover, because, I mean, otherwise it was just, but you don't need that with websites.
So he doesn't, he doesn't have any new stuff at all. Just this stale shit from December, which I thought was boring. It wasn't good.
I've already run a search here for Barrett Brown.
There you go.
Here's one from January 25th. Dude, I don't see anything new here.
There's nothing new.
I remember Santa Muerte, full of grace.
No.
Oh, here's the December. The government explains why it took my email.
Yeah, it's very, very boring. And it's all these, you know, he's got this blog quote that's like a whole page long.
It is. I've got to really scroll to get through it. Yesterday, staff handed me a notice. I mean, this is also just fucking utter minutia here.
That's what is bad. That's what it is. That's what's boring trash. I mean.
Now note that the date of this rejection notice is October 27th, and that I received it on November 11th.
That's a real kicker there. Perhaps Citizen Body really does have a point about my failure to follow procedure. I already missed the deadline, you know, but look, that's a real, really drives it home there.
I mean, really, though, if that's what he was arriving at, because it's just so dry, that should have been maybe like this third or fourth sentence of the work, and then why the fuck is he going on about all this, you know?
And he shouldn't have written it to begin with and just start something else.
He could have written anything. He could have written some satire from prison. I mean, fuck it, you're in prison, go hog wild.
Well, that's what he is doing.
This is his version of going wild.
It's just not good.
Barry gone wild.
Well, have you read that Emma Quangle book?
Spooks?
Yeah.
You read it a little bit.
You want to talk about a bad writing.
Oh, man. Well, here's the thing. I've talked to some people who... Well, first of all, I want your opinion. Do you think Emma Quangle was wronged?
Well, sure.
Because she was doxxed, and like that's kind of dirty, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that this Spooks book was literally unreadable.
How could it? Oh, well, there's more to it than just that. And it's related to the doxing, I think, directly.
Because it's all, in a way, directly addressing Molly Crabapple. She's even a character in the book.
No, she's not a character in the book, but it seems as if the book is, the whole world is her character, right? You know how, like, sometimes a setting is a character?
Yes.
right? And a lot of times, especially in a sci-fi, when you've got a whole kind of dystopian world, the world takes on a very definite character, you know. This one is Molly Crab. If you were to make a Molly Crabapple world where everything ran according to Molly Crabapple style and aesthetic and personality, it would be this one. But this one is especially a dystopia, right? As such a thing would, you know, likely be. But
Info, what is her name? InfoSec Katy Perry says, the city is a major character in Blade Runner, in the book Blade Runner.
There's no book Blade Runner.
Or the movie? No, there's a book.
Yeah. No, it's called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's not the first one that... It's not the first one that would come to mind. I don't know. Maybe the movie. I've never even seen the movie.
It's one of Tom Cruise's greatest movies.
Tom Cruise is not in that movie.
He's the starring...
No, he's not.
It was John Travolta and Tom Cruise. It was like a buddy comedy.
No.
This is what you would call like a dystopia.
It's one.
And, you know, at first they were at odds. They didn't like each other's style. It was a little rocky. Tom Cruise was the crazy one. Travolta was... down the middle.
I don't know what movie you're talking about.
They could never agree on who was a replicant.
That's
not.
And
then, you know, at the end, they finally were on the same page. So
we're really not talking about that. But that's nothing to do with the setting or the spooks or anything. That's totally out there, man. Fuck do you call it? The spooks book. Everyone in it is wearing Google glasses. And it's like people are selling footage of their daily lives, and this young woman is unpopular until she starts talking about politics and basically shilling. And there's this guy who's basically raping her, who's like in charge of her and what she does. And he's like, yeah, you better take your clothes off more. And that's where she gets all her money and popularity from, and how her point of view it's not her point of view though. It's the evil empire's, just script. She's just reading off a script, right? And just a pair of tits attached to a script.
Has Molly Crabapple ever gotten naked for art?
Yeah.
Was it that kind of where it draws, where, like, people are skeptical because they don't know if it's just to get attention or if like it's actually serving some artistic purpose or both? I never saw it.
Well, me neither. I don't think there was any kind of I mean, it's more of just like a brand type of thing, branding. Like, she's the art girl who got arrested at Occupy or something. There's no and she had...
Oh, I remember that.
Right. And she was, before that,
I saw those photos as she was getting stuck in the van.
Her career before that was the one where it was more about, I don't know, her doing stuff like, dressing up, dressing down, taking off her clothes for drawing. When students are learning, they like to, draw a subject. And it was that kind of thing. And I know she was involved with the whole Bordello scene, not Bordello, the burlesque scene. Mm-hmm. And I don't...
Bueller's Bordello.
I don't think she was, you know, a dancer. I think she was more on the drawing flyers side of things. I don't know. I'm just guessing, really. But, I, you know, this book, Spooks, it's a...
Everybody's wearing Google Glass. And
everyone's wearing Google Glass. The
fetishization of technology driving... Yeah.
Popular views, and they don't have parliaments, but burlesques, where I guess it's like, imagine if Washington D.C. or whatever, you know, and you go down to the Capitol and you all dress up like you're going down to the burlesque show, and it's all a bunch of popularity and sex, like, and
beauty, this is how they decide politics and so on. It's like over in England, where it's in Parliament, where they're all yelling and it's theater, and you know the issues have already been decided. This is just the theater.
Well, you know, that's putting a whole new thing on it. It's nothing to do with any of that.
Because I didn't read it, so like we're talking there's... a lot about stuff that like at least one of us hasn't.
I've read it. No, I mean. I can
but
tell
then we were
you
talking about Blade Runner,
happens.
And like you hadn't seen the movie.
Well, I can tell
I'm
you
only
about
going
the,
on the movie.
The book. And,
it was a buddy comedy with them.
That's not the movie, man.
I think
it's not the that wasn't the movie. I've seen parts of the movie, and that's not it. It's the one with Harrison Ford.
And well, he was in it too. He played the kooky janitor.
No.
And he kept trying to get the gopher.
No.
And they kept getting the best of him. Or was a groundhog. And Rodney Dangerfield was in it. He was like, he couldn't get no respect.
Yeah.
That was Blade Runner.
No. That was not Blade Runner.
We watched it together.
No, I never saw Blade Runner. I mean, not all the way through.
Most of that stuff happened near the end.
That's not what happened at the end. The end, he's riding on a train. And it's raining.
Where's the train go?
It goes to self-realization.
Did you see the Hunger Games?
No.
Movies?
No.
I watched Catching Fire, and it was so dumb. It was just unbearable. At one point, there's this spinning island.
And it sounds like Pontypool, dude.
Oh yeah, Pontypool. Now that's a movie we've both seen.
Yeah.
If you're listening to Hey Radio right now and you've seen Pontypool, the movie about the people, it all takes place inside that radio station.
The town there's a sickness that sweeps through this small town, and you're in the radio station, right? Where it comes in, and the sickness is transmitted through language. And the things that it hooks into are, you know, like words and phrases having to do with, you know, affection or love, right?
It was, and this disease was spread through these, basically by an idea or a thought. And if they entertain that thought, then they too had the zombie disease. It zombifies you.
Turns you into if you, especially the, you know, more did they end up doing to get out of it? It was like they had to say kisses kill, right? And they had to say that like 100 times.
That really took me out of it. It could have been anything else.
What? Kisses kill? You didn't like that bit of it?
It could have been hate is love is hate or something like that, right?
Kisses kill is kind of, it's kind of kill. Killed the movie.
Killed it was a really good movie.
Yeah, and they started talking about Roland Barthes and shit. It was weird.
And you don't expect the kisses kill part. Like, the movie was still good. It had a satisfying conclusion. Whatever it was. I don't even remember. I was really stoned, I think. And
yeah. No, that was a great movie. I think the ladies in the room were just like, wrote it off and were like, oh, this is stupid, and just left to go party.
They went out to the fucking bar.
And then we watched the rest of the this movie that they wanted to watch to begin with. And it was good. I've seen a lot of bad movies, and that one was not that bad. I mean, I don't think that Kisses Kill thing really killed it. I thought that was kind of cheesy, but...
It was like they really had a good concept, and they were thinking a lot about this shit.
They could have done more scenes outside of that damn radio station, too. It felt like you were just stuck in there for hours. You know?
I'm sure that was the point, though. They wanted us to feel like we couldn't.
They'll say, they always say that, but then they just didn't have the budget. They just didn't have the budget.
But, like, the whole, and they did what they could with that budget, and everything was, like, accounted for, except it feels like the Kisses Kill thing, it was like they had a 5-minute conversation. They're like, okay, well, what do they do? And, like, the broads came back from the bar, and they said, oh, kiss, make them think that kiss means kill, and they'll kiss each other and kill the zombies.
No, it was because the affectionate words were what turned them murderous. And when they would, you know, when someone would call up and there was some phone call where they called in and someone was like, oh, I love you, doodly-doo, I hope you're safe, and blah, 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 blah. And then it just got worse. That's what made it real bad.
Because this guy was really hateful. He was running hate radio, basically.
And he was so mad all the time that he was the only one who could avoid it, right? Because he was such a straight shooter. Shock jock.
I bet Alex Jones watched that, and he said, see, this is what I'm saying. This is what I meant.
Probably. He's always right about everything and proved right by everything. Nothing can ever prove him wrong.
No, he will finesse it into his worldview like it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, that's like imagine a puzzle where all the pieces just fit together every time, you know. No, and there's no wrong spot to put them, you know. That's what that kind of paranoid thinking is.
And what kind of picture does that make?
Well, usually it's kind of like a mirror. It's just a big mirror, and you don't think it's a mirror. But every piece just makes it more and more of a reflection.
So when you look in that thing, you see yourself?
Well, you see whatever it is like confirmation bias. You see whatever it is you already saw. So maybe it's more like glass than a mirror. I don't know.
I think he looks into it, and he sees the buddy comedy, the 1985 Blade Runner, with Hugh Jackman, John Travolta, and Tom Cruise. And Harrison Ford is the kooky janitor. No, but...
Yeah, James, we get it. We get it, man.
It's a big jumbled fucking mess of, everything... Alex Jones has done this so long now that everything is basically a contradiction.
Like, I don't know what you mean. What do you mean?
Like you said, if you can put any piece anywhere, then like nothing holds up anymore. The people that listen to that shit and that repeat what he says, they just got that wild look in their eyes, like they've been just confused or mesmerized. And something important is there, but they like the best thing to do is know what's going on in this country.
This type of thinking is all over the place, not just Alex Jones, but it's kind of just a, you know, just the usual mess, you know. You think you're somewhere, but you're just nowhere. Everything fits together, right? But there's nothing connecting them. It's just a big confusion.
I was talking to a lady recently, and we hadn't talked very much, but finally we had gotten around to sort of talking about the way that we digest mass media and shit like that. And we both kind of agreed that there should be, you know, like when you're fucking 6 or 7 years old, there should be like a class on skepticism or something where you're taught like what not to, you know, like how not to ingest media too.
That's too bad. You know, I don't think that would solve it. I think that might have some.
That's not what I'm saying.
What's the point?
And what she said was that it seems like, like what you were just saying, that there's a bigger problem where people are just, there's like a mass confusion. People don't really know how to interpret this hysterical bullshit that just keeps bubbling up. It's like every bubble is crazier than the last. Like this morning I saw that video of the little girls at the Pensacola, Florida Trump rally singing.
Yeah.
Three little girls.
Yeah.
And the violent stuff that was coming out of their tiny voices.
Yeah. It reminded me of that Prussian Blue band.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
They sing about Hitler and stuff. Cute little blonde girls.
Yeah. I think the mind is like your hand, you know, or your hands, both your hands. You can only hold on to, you know, you can get two handfuls. Maybe you can, you know, train it to hold a lot more, right? You can work, but it's only so much there, you know, and these people are just running out there and grabbing stuff off the shelf, you know, I'll take this, I'll take this, I'll take that, and just throwing stuff out just as quick. And you can give them a lesson when they're 7 years old, put that thing in their hand, but they're just going to drop it, you know, as soon as they go home. You know, that was not a fun toy. You know,
like I don't broccoli at school. Fuck that. I got Coke in the fridge.
Yeah. Why do I want to not, you know, why do I want to take the hard time to look at everything critically, you know?
It is hard. It's hard what we do. And you can hear me stretching. I'm giving myself a pat on the back.
There you go.
For being such a critical thinker and a thought leader in these dark times. I've got the torch.
That's enough critical thinking for anybody for their whole life.
You know, another critical thought that most people don't have, and including myself, is this this feeling that, like, I'm a good person. I'm a good, you know, because you're taught that, like, oh, you're good and you're special and, like, you're awesome and you're, you know, you're going to save the world or whatever the fuck they tell kids. And like, everybody kind of operates on that. Like, I don't do anything wrong. I don't think anything selfish. It's this whole shitty world around me.
A lot of people will have that, or will fucking tweak that and amplify it even further and do these practices like yoga or meditation, and it's like, you know, maybe you've read a couple books on it, even maybe you've even taken a couple lessons, but that doesn't, you know, that stuff is not there to make you feel better or be better or improve at all. It's not the purpose, but that's what, you know, it becomes this kind of just another source of inflation of the ego, right?
Yeah, like somebody's been going to yoga for 6 weeks now, and like,
and
oh,
they're,
you know,
they
I'm
finally,
a spiritual person.
They're much better than they were, right?
They're enlightened.
Yeah.
And they know it.
And stay away. Watch out. Because they're going to lord it right over you.
Feels like we're really scraping resin on stuff to hate right now.
But no, this stuff is pretty close at home for my hatred.
I mean, I see a lot of that, you know? I see a lot of it where these people think mighty fucking highly of themselves to be walking around in yoga pants and a chai tea latte in their hands. I don't know what that means. I just fucking hate seeing that.
I like chai tea.
I love chai tea. And I hate myself. But it's got nothing to do with the chai tea.
That is, you know, we could have a spiritual retreat program where we get listeners and readers, and we take them out to somewhere and teach them to hate themselves more. And
we just pump them full of Terramax.
So, well, that's part of, you know, a lot of people go and have ayahuasca trips, but that's kid stuff compared. And, you know, really grind their ego down into nothing. Just break them down. It would almost be like a boot camp, right? And we just get a hire a bunch of really tall, intimidating men and have them, you know, bark at people until, you know, tell them all the things they aren't. You know, you aren't special. Everything you read is wrong, and you read it the wrong way too, and everything you say is wrong and is full of evil things that you don't recognize as evil, and they always will be, and you just keep yelling at them with this until they're, you know, just kind of down in some cold mud, you know, just covered, just up to them. And then their breathing will, like, you'll see at one point, I think, when it will take hold, they'll start breathing slowly, you know, their eyes will dilate, and they'll just kind of, they'll stop feeling uncomfortable with the mud, and they'll just realize that's their situation, and they have to deal with it. And then it will be as if they've just woken up from a dream.
The mud will be their bed where they wake up, and they won't leap up out of the mud. They won't say, "Thank God I'm up out of that mud." They'll lay there, and they'll reflect on the dissolution of their ego as they watch us.
No, they might leap up. They might, you know, start walking around.
Well, if I saw them leap up at my retreat, my Libeljorka retreat, they just leapt up out of the mud. I'd have the tall guys just go right back into the screaming and the ayahuasca and the Terramax.
It depends I'd have to get a good look in their eyes, because if they look in their eyes like, I'm going to run home right now or run to the shower or whatever the fuck it is, they're back in the yelling. Yet, if they're leaping up and they have any kind of twinkle of understanding in their eye, and they're not leaping up to get away, because they've got there and they're on the other side, that's okay. I mean, you can't just lay in the mud forever, right? I mean, I guess
you
could.
Are they really broken if they get up out of the mud?
They're not. Well, they're only being broken for the purpose so that they can get up out of the mud. And
this is why this is never going to work, because I want them to like lay there and die in the mud.
We don't want to kill you know, they do that. They do those death trips in those other spiritual camps where they're like, oh, we're gonna go get ourselves in an oven, 200-degree oven for a couple hours and come out, and or they're gonna go take a bunch of, yeah, or they'll go wander off in the woods without food or water for 2 weeks, or they'll go into a igloo for a month. And basically this is like a coming of age ritual that I think we lack in it, and what we're talking about is kind of just a childish point of view that because people lack a kind of, you know, this coming of age type of ritual, right? They're not awake to the world. They're not adults to the world, you know? They're still children, a childish mindset, right?
They're just little babies, infants.
We run home to safety all constantly, and they're always running. It's always a run. No one... You can tell right away if someone is always, you know, running around at full speed, or, you know, just they're a slave to their impulses, basically.
And this is why you would want to look in their eyes.
You can see it right away that child is forever lost its innocence, you know, when you put it through something like that. When these kids go off into the igloo for a month, and you just bring them just enough scraps that they don't die, and they could die, and or they go down to Central America and take some random drugs handed to them by some fake shaman, you know, pay them $3,000 for it, and then they die of that shit too. You don't want it. Yeah, Steve, you don't want to, you know, we're shamans who aren't pretending to be anything we aren't. We're just got some mud and some yelling guys. And it's not so much about breaking the will. In fact, it's creating a will, because these people who we're talking about who need this kind of a treatment, they don't have any will to break. What they have is childish urges to break and will to build up. So when they jump up and they're in their own control and not in the, you know, not just, you know, ready to run back to safety, you know.
Say, I know what you want to do. You want to run back to that Facebook. You lay down in the mud.
Yep. You lay down.
Run back to that Twitter. You lay down in the mud.
Right.
Run back to Netflix. You lay back down in the mud.
It's cold, and you just lay down there, and it's got to cover everything except the face. Just totally covering the body. We just shovel it over them.
Now, are there worms and stuff in the mud to keep it, you know, replenished with nutrients?
Get back in.
Get back in the mud.
That's right. If you're even thinking about such a thing, you get back in.
That
concern, it means you haven't had enough yet.
Yeah. If you're listening right now and you'd like to be one of the introductory members of the Liebel Joker Incorporated Terramax ayahuasca infused Terramax childish urge breaking camp, give us a call at chronicle.su/ what is it, contact or something, press.
And even if you've gone through it 2, 3, 4 times, you know, you can always use another treatment. It's not something that ever is totally, you know, you can't close the door on that.
Work is never finished.
You got to constantly just be broken every day, every morning, every moment. You've got to be broken.
Always ABD. Always be dying.
I've never heard that one.
There is there's this thing that's gonna that happens after they're broken down. Like you break their, you break them down into dust, and but that dust coagulates into mud, and it's got to be ground down again and again into a finer and finer until it's a powder that Dr. Angstrom H. Troubadour can snort like cocaine.
Well, and actually, let's not give them any, let's say, delusions that there's progress that's made. You don't even ever make progress. You will never make progress. You'll never be ground down further and further. I mean, you'll be ground down at one moment, and then, you know, you could wake up the next day, and it's all undone. It's all for no reason. You know, it's how quickly these kind of treatment. You know, sometimes people will have an acid trip and have a amazing, you know, conversion like religious experience, and then next day they're like, "Oh yeah, I remember that. It was fake."
Yeah, like that was really cool, man.
Yeah.
When I saw myself from outer space and I thought I was God for a minute, and then I considered that I might be the devil. That was fun. We should do that next weekend.
We should. Except for, let's try to stack it with some Terramax and go on down to the mud pit for our... You know, the yelling part is only like just a few minutes, really. And that's when they get you put down in the mud and shovel it on and they call you names. But then the real bit is just 7 hours of silence. And most people can't stand just 5 minutes of silence. They've got to have, you know, to put on the TV, put on the, put something on, put some music on. I can't stand my own mind, but you're stuck there with your own mind just for 7-8 hours, however long it takes. Flipping out, you know, it's the drugs wheel it up, you know, get it spinning at full speed, and it's not easy, you know.
It's not easy at all.
7 hours of pure silence.
That's what you pay for. You come out and they, you know, you don't throw yourself in that mud. You don't shovel your own mud. There's a tall, bald-headed screaming guy to do that for you. That's what. That's where your money goes.
And he keeps a threatening eye on you in case he has to put you back down. Because they will, you do sign a waiver that says for 7 hours, you know, they can do whatever they want to you. And they will keep throwing you back down, yelling at you, and, you know, I guess they can leave on their own if they like.
It seems a little consensual, but yeah, I get it.
But only after 7 hours, you know. And
it seems a little unfair to the other people in the mud hole.
You know, there've been one or two people who have left after 7 hours of this forced introspection and this forced kind of degradation and, you know, filth and whatnot, which, you know, sometimes we really filth up the filth if someone who needs it. You asked the question of what's it like earlier. Yeah, it could be. It could be. It depends on how much we like this person and how much they, because sometimes people need that rotting flesh and food and urine. Sometimes
extra tang.
They need to know that it's there because they'll do nothing but fixate on thinking whether or not it's there. Like you thought earlier, how filthy is this filth? Well, if anyone has any doubt at all, that's when we go get the real filth and throw it on them.
And you can see the doubt in their eyes when they're on that kind of psychedelic.
Yeah, it's all, you can read their eyes. You learn to read their eyes.
Like a pamphlet about Jehovah's Witnesses. You can read them.
And you can see, in their eyes, relief, because they're very worried that there's filth in this dirt. And once you pile that filth on, it's like their worries, it's like they wanted it so bad. It's like, oh, well, finally I know it's there. Now I have nothing to think of. And they're relieved. And I've seen a single shovel full of filth totally turn a guy over. Just, there he was. He was ready right then, 2 hours into it.
He said, thank you. That's all I needed. Let's just go. Let's just keep doing it.
He comes back every weekend.
He likes tall, screaming Larry.
Yeah.
Larry the Screamer is like his favorite screamer now.
Because sometimes
gives it a little extra.
Sometimes we have to pull out Spook of the Lulz, and she'll do a little special treatment, which we can't talk about on a family show like this.
Give him a little up and down all around. The thing about...
she does things with filth. She does things with filth that tall guy couldn't even dream of.
But we can't talk about it on this show?
I mean, if you want to.
I mean, we could keep alluding to it. But I think the listeners probably get the idea.
You know, they know about the vacuum pumps and the
rotting.
Yeah, the corpses.
And stinking.
Yeah, they don't need to know.
And the paunch.
I think that's enough for our show, really.
I'm HateSec, and you've been listening to an enlightening conversation on the Liebel Droker ego death camps. On canonical.su, Hate Radio. Radio Hate is brought to you proudly by Liebel Droker Incorporated. This is canonical.su. Go fuck yourselves.
I drink a lot of whiskey. I'm smoking all the time. I'm getting fucked up every goddamn night. Everybody's doing cocaine and starting up fights. And I'm living fast and hard and dying young with my goddamn loaded fist fury. Doing what I do and I'm spitting. Cause I'm dominating you. Living hard and doing time, and I don't give a fuck. And I've been beat down and thrown around, and now you're out of luck. And punch, fight, fuck. Punch, fight, and fuck.
All right.